Welcome to Writers Talking Screen, a podcast from the Writers Guild of Canada. In each episode, we focus on Canadian screenwriters and their art. Through deep dive interviews with the most talented screenwriters in the country, we talk about the craft of screenwriting, go behind the scenes on the writing of a particular series or film, and cover the most pressing issues in the industry today. In this episode, Clément Virgo and Michael McGowan discuss their approaches to the craft of filmmaking, from their different takes on dialogue and structure, to how they think of themselves as artists. It's a fascinating conversation between two of Canada's most talented filmmakers.
One of Canada's foremost film and TV directors, Clément Virgo, directed and wrote the screen adaptation of David Chariandi's Brother, which premiered at TIFF in 2022 and won 12 CSAs, including Best Picture, Best Direction, and Best Adapted Screenplay, as well as the 2023 WGC Screenwriting Award for Best Feature. His first feature, Rude, premiered at Cannes Official Selection 1995. He co-wrote and directed the six-part series, The Book of Negroes, based on Lawrence Hill's novel, which opened MyCom 2015 and was a Peabody Award nominee. His TV credits include HBO's The Wire, Netflix's Dahmer, and OWN's Greenleaf, where he also served as executive producer with Oprah Winfrey. No big deal. Please welcome Clément Virgo, everyone.
Thank you, Emily. Thanks for the invitation. It's great to be here and great to be here with Mike. I've known Mike forever.
We're thrilled to have you. And Michael McGowan is a multi-hyphenate content creator. He has written, directed, and produced six award-winning feature films, including, most recently, the acclaimed screen adaptations of Miriam Tave's novel All My Puny Sorrows, which won the 2022 WGC Screenwriting Award for Best Feature. As a former journalist and best-selling YA novelist, McGowan's career has spanned numerous genres. He has directed commercials for Nike and created shows for Netflix. From opening the Toronto International Film Festival to running a stop-motion animation studio, the constant in McGowan's work has been a unique creativity. And Michael is also the host of today's conversation, so I will pass the mic to you now, Michael.
Thank you. Thanks, Emily. Thanks for having me. I'm not really going to be the host. Clément and I are going to be talking. So the first question I have for you, Clément, because I'm always interested in this, because it's the right is what is your writing process?
What is my writing process?
I'm sure it changes over different, we'll start with that open-ended.
Cool. But first, I just want to thank you, Mike, for having this conversation with me. And I'm hoping that it's a conversation, that it's an exchange as opposed to, you interviewing me. And I might turn some like questions onto you. But in terms of my writing process, I usually start with a notebook, I have a notebook that I jot ideas down in. If I have an idea, or if I'm, in the case of Brother, adapting Brother, I would put all the moments that resonated with me in the novel into this notebook. And I'll spend, a few weeks just on that. When I finally go to write, I tend to start at the beginning, and I write all the way through. And if something occurs to me as I'm going through, I usually just make a note. I never go back. I make a note because I'm trying to get to the end.
And how long, for Brother, 3 weeks, say, jotting notes, figuring out, and then you start, and how long by the time when you start to when you finish that first draft?
In the case of Brother, it was really fast. I don't know why it was. It was essentially, you might laugh at this, but it was about maybe 2.5 weeks.
That makes sense. Like one week I was stuck for a year and a half. I thought some show was going to go. It never went. I was so desperate. I wrote it in a week, but it sort of probably took me 2 years to get to the week.
Exactly. So you know that, so you know that feeling. So I, Brother took me 2.5 weeks roughly. And then I, the first draft is long, and then I just start. I go back to the beginning, and I comb through it, and I rewrite it, and then I go through it again, and I just really kind of go through it until it's like completely as tight and as economical, and as, you know, as it could be. And I spend a lot of time working on those first 10 pages.
Right, and, so, and then and you're writing like what's a day look like when you're at 2.5 weeks? Are you getting up in the morning and sort of going, I need to get so many pages done, or are you doing it at night? Like, and where, like, how are you?
I usually it's usually in the morning, yeah. And I have to write with music, yeah. and it usually goes from maybe 7, because I find my brain is fresh in the morning. From around 7:30 to around 11:30 noon, yeah. And then I usually stop, and then I'm thinking about it for the rest of the day, making notes to myself, yeah. And so, you know, that's my process. How about you? What's your how do you do
It depends on the project, right? So with All My Puny Sorrows, I read it, I loved it, and I thought, okay, this will be an easy adaptation, and I got completely stuck. Like, so much so that I was ready to apologize to Miriam that, like, sorry, I just can't do it. And then we went out to dinner and we just talked, and I figured out a way through it. And then it came really quickly. Like, so the problem with the book was what's really affected me to write the screenplay. And then I figured out that Yoli was trying to restore balance in the universe. And once I had that idea, the whole thing became really easy to write. So I find, so, but if I'm doing like not based on an adaptation, I tend to write a few scenes first. Like, it's like, right. Oh, this might be good. I don't know where it's going to go. I have no idea where it's going to go, or it might not go anywhere.
Right.
And I'll write a few scenes, and then I'll kind of have to go back and sort of write. Like, now I'm trying to write a pilot. I'm like, here, like the notebook is kind of just filled with like just ideas and stuff like that.
Right.
So I'll kind of go back and forth, like, to see if it has legs, if you know what I mean. Like, you kind of start, like, I think any good idea almost can be distilled in a sentence or a log line, but then you got to kind of figure out how to, what world you're in and what the characters are. And so it's a back and forth for me.
Do you usually know what your climax is?
No, like, not really. And I've tended to find that I'll get to a certain point and I'll get stuck. Like, so for 1 week, the first act always ended with him going away on the motorcycle. But then, like, we set up one world, we went to another world, and it just wasn't working. And that's where I sort of got stuck. So then I realized, we just start the movie as you're sick and you're screwed. The whole tension is whether he's going to get treatment. And so it's, I don't really, do you know where you're going? It's stuff that's not.
I usually have a climax, an emotional, the sort of the emotional climax of the story. I usually have that, and I'm working towards that climax. And then once I have that climax that I'm satisfied with, then I'm rewriting emotionally to get to that moment.
And, right.
So I'll rewrite. So I rarely ever. I don't think I've ever written not knowing where I'm going.
Yeah, I get to a certain point, I kind of know the characters' voices. Like, okay, like it's not like you're channeling, but some process of that, you're hearing the voices. And then, and then I'm trying to figure out who the characters are. And then I think I do that third sort of thing. Like, and sometimes I tend to get stuck a lot.
Do you find your way in through character or through images?
I'm more through character. It's all character for me. How about for you?
I find my way through structure.
Right.
I find that I need to know the architecture of the script, and then through images.
Right.
And then the character sort of, you know. And then I find the character to kind of help me get to that emotional climax. So
with Brother, like, one of the obviously striking images was the electrical tower.
Right.
I'm really stupid, but I thought the climax obviously was when he gets shot, like the
A spoiler alert, by the way.
I know we're good. But we'll just assume everybody's seen everything we've ever done. You and I, they know it. They've seen it multiple viewings. But I read the book, but a long time ago.
Right.
Was the electrical tower? I don't feel like that was in there. Was that all you?
The tower's in one scene. Is in the first scene, but I use it as a kind of motif because for me, I find that this might sound strange, but I don't really think of myself as a classic screenwriter. I sort of see myself as someone who, as a kind of writer director, someone who sort of, I see the movie, and I'm just writing down what I see. You know, I see the whole movie, and then I'm just writing down the images and the characters in the story that I see within a structure, within an architecture.
That's interesting. So are you directing the movie when you're writing it then? Like, two parts. The other question is, do you consider yourself more of a writer or a director?
I see myself as a director who writes, you know.
Right.
As opposed to a writer who directs.
Because I would go, I'm a writer who directs, because we first met when I was a journalist and I was following you in Los Angeles when you were directing a Fugees video. It's interesting because I'm the other way, totally the other way, a writer who happens to direct.
Yeah. I sort of see myself as a director who writes. I think that the biggest influence on my the writing process for me has been editing, because as you know, and this is what I want to ask you, how much of your finished screenplay do you throw out once you're in the editing room?
I would say, so my screenplays come in pretty lean because I don't direct them in the screenplay. I just kind of get whatever I need down for a reader. But I would say they come in at, say, 90 to 100 pages. And we have our first assembly at, say, 2 hours and 30 minutes. And then they end up usually about an hour. So 50 minutes we throw, like we leave.
You cut out 50 minutes of your movie.
Yeah. And I always think they're lean going in. And I always watch the first assembly. And I basically need therapy because I think it's the worst piece of shit. That's like, honestly, like when I have great editors who are amazing. It's all the little things, sound and stuff like that. And I've worked with them a long time. I say, take out stuff. Don't be afraid. Like, if you think it's crap, we can go back and revisit it, but take it out. And it's just torture for me to watch the first. It's never been easy. How about you?
With the brother watching the first assembly was fine. But I've had those moments where you've seen something of, you know, and I think, oh my God, what was I thinking? But this is interesting to me. So in terms of the writing process, then, did you say to yourself, you know, you make a film, you write and direct a film, and then you think, you know, I'm not going to waste all that stuff that I threw out in that last movie. On this movie, I'm going to be more efficient, more economical, and I'm not going to make the same mistake twice. Did you find yourself making that same mistake where you've written too much and now you have to throw out 50 minutes of your movie?
No, I don't feel like, I just feel like the editing process is the third right. I love it. Once I get past that first assembly and we're actually kind of quote unquote rewriting the film, it's not self-flagellation like you're an idiot or why did you write this? It's you just kind of, it's the alchemy of like discovering what your film is about, even though it doesn't really change. And all this serendipity that, you know, that goes on during the filming, you know, somebody might have been great or somebody you thought could have been great wasn't as great, or it's superfluous because you don't need it. But I don't look at it as, I think I'm getting smarter, hopefully. Like, mm-hmm. You kind of go, okay, if this is not driving the story, but I wouldn't want to just write. And I'm not trying to write because we just don't have enough money in Canada to go, okay, we're going to shoot and reshoot and figure this out. But I do find that it's just part of the process. It's never changed. And I love it. Question for you. So when you finish a draft, like, okay, are you haunted by two questions? Are you haunted? Like, when you're writing, are you like, I'm killing this. This is great. Or are you going, I don't know if anybody's going to like this. Like, how, what's in your head? Probably a loaded question. The answer for me. All right.
Yeah. When I'm writing, you know, I'm usually conscious of someone. I'm asking someone to spend time reading my screenplay.
Sure.
You know, and so I'm conscious of trying to figure out how to get you to turn that page.
Yes.
I'm always aware of, you know, of that. And if I feel like I'm in a groove, yeah, I've had moments where I've felt like I've been in a zone where I'm like, this is great. The dialogue is sparkling. The imagery is great. I've had those moments, but I find, the first draft is usually just horrible because I'm just trying to get everything down in my head onto the page. And it's usually, the scripts are usually long, like, you know, more than 120 pages. Yeah. And then I'm trying to get it down to between, like, you know, 105 and 90 pages and 90 yeah. pages. So then it's really a question of how do I get the reader? How do I set up the world? How do I set up the characters? How do I set up the mystery, the suspense, or whatever that is? And how do I get you to turn that page? And that's you know, because I, you know, we've all, you and I have been sent scripts.
Yes.
You know, friends have asked us to read it, or someone reaches out and say, can you read your script, read my script? And then you think, we've all seen movies. Why is this person, you know, giving us a script that you can't start your movie with like a 10 page dialogue scene? I suppose you can, but it's probably not.
Yeah. I know. Yes. I mean, that's the problem when you get scripts. You're like, have you not, like, do, I don't know. Yeah. That most of them are not great. I find that I really wrestle with that voice in my head that you can't write.
Like, really?
That's kind of the biggest obstacle in the process. And it feels really Sisyphean. Like, I'm pushing, like, I kind of have to trick myself to say, get two pages done and don't judge yourself. And then you kind of do it. I can go back the next day and go, that wasn't so, like, I look at it like sort of with a little time. Sometimes I'm like, okay, that's not really doing anything. But a lot of times I'll go, yeah, that's pretty good. And like getting in that, like, say, zone or whatever, you have those times where,
right,
it just comes easy. And you're like, it's like, I just think of Stephen King, who just, like, oh, I go down and write, you know, I don't know, 5,000 words in 4 hours or something like that. And that's, I kind of wish that was my process, but and I can objectively say, okay, I'm not a bad writer, but I wish I didn't wrestle with that voice that says it. Cause when I go on set, I find directing, in spite of all the craziness of it, the train's going to leave the station.
Right.
I can figure it out. I don't find directing pressure, if that makes any sense, but I find the ineffectiveness of my writing process, which I know is the way I write. I wish I was just, I could just go get it done in 2 hours and live the rest of, like, have the rest of my day. But sometimes with, like, 8 hours of writing, I'm like, oh my God, I could have done this in 20 minutes.
How much prose do you put into your screenplays in terms of, you know, like, how much prose do you put in to make it exciting to read?
As much, so I'm sure you don't put stage direction. I know not stage direction, but you don't put directorial, like,
no. And I really put the actual prose in there.
I do. Like, so I write for a non-technical reader. Like, as you were saying, same thing as you were saying, like, I want people to turn the page. So I put as much prose in as I think is going to tell the story. Like, and so it tends not to be a lot, but it's always important. Like, it's not like, okay, we're in a house. I don't really care what, like, unless we're in a gothic house or whatever, like, unless it's driving the story, right. I don't put that in. And then, cause I'm sure, like, not I'm sure, but when you're putting imagery in, are you putting a lot of imagery in there?
You know, I rarely put prose in, but what I do is, like, I really have two images, two things that I'm working with: sound and image.
In terms of, in the screenplay.
In a screenplay. And I want as much, I'm a lazy reader.
Yeah.
And so I put as much white on the page.
Yeah.
As I could get, you know what I mean? Like so my first drafts are usually like not a lot of white, a lot of like ink, a lot of dialogue, like description, a lot of, you know, and then I go through and then I'm trying to like, it's like when you write it, you know, when somebody, cause I find I'm lazy reader. And so it's like when somebody sends you an email and you think, and you open an email of like two paragraphs, it's like, oh my God, it's like, you read the email, it's like you could have put this in one sentence.
Well, it looks like you have a lot of books behind you right there. I'm looking at your bookshelves right now. I'm going, there's a lot of bookshelves there.
Well, it's a combination of Blu-rays, DVDs, and books, right?
Okay.
But for me, for screenplays, I find that I want it to be as clean a read and as easy a read.
Yes.
I don't want the reader to work at all. I want them to, because we've picked up
100%.
I've picked up screenplays, and you know, it's like a movie, right? Or scripts. You know, within two pages, if you're in good hands.
I agree. Yeah.
Within two pages, if you're in good hands. And it's like, you know, and with the movie, we've all started a movie and you think, oh man, I'm not in good hands. And because for whatever reason, the vibe, the imagery, the style, the way that what they choose to show us, you know, I read a lot of screenplays, not as much as I used to, but I would read a lot of screenplays, you know, back in the day. There were, you know, and they still have them, these websites where you could go to, you know, look at a screenplay that's been made into a movie. So I would go and look at a screenplay that's been made into a movie or like a TV show, and I would read that script and see what made it onto the screen. And the screenplays that I tend to like usually have a lot of white on the page, economical, tight, and they make you want to turn the page for whatever reason. They have mystery, suspense, you know.
100%. So then, but the interesting thing to me is you talk about sound in the screenplay. Tell me what I don't understand what you're talking about with that.
Well, again, this is maybe the directing side of me. You know what I mean? It's like directing side of me is always, because I've read screenplays where people, you know, where there's stuff, and you know this, I mean, people write stuff that you can't possibly film. So, you know, someone's having a memory of their childhood and they're having these thoughts, and you think, I don't know how I'm going to, as a director, side of me is like, I don't know how I'm going to film that person thinking all that stuff and feeling all that stuff. I tend to just write what I could see and what I could hear.
Yes.
And that's it. That's all.
I see what you're saying. You're not saying? Okay. Yeah.
I'm not trying. It's like, I don't film, I don't put anything in the screenplay that I can't put on camera.
I agree completely. I think that's a great note. Like, you know, he feels sad. He comes in, he feels sad. Like, you never do that. Either it's going to be discovered in the scene or, you know, something seen. I mean, I go, he comes in to the other character, something seems off. Are you okay? You know, and then, but that idea, he seems sad. I mean, I guess you can get away, they can walk like this, but
see, I would never write, he feels sad. I would write what the person is doing, right?
Yes, exactly.
I would write their behavior.
Yes, his shoulders are slumped or whatever.
It comes in, you know, like I would just write the description of what I think sad is.
And you do read stuff that you're like, yes, you're not going to be able to, it's an interior thought that you have to either get out in dialogue, but you can't cheat it.
Or like action or like behavior.
Sure. Yeah, of course. Yeah. But you can't, their interior world, it doesn't work, you know, whatever.
Have you read screenplays that are beautifully written? Because I've read a few beautifully written screenplays, and you've gone to see the pilot, or you've gone to see the TV show, or you've gone to see the movie, and it doesn't reflect the feel or the beauty of what that screenplay was.
I'm trying. So I read like when I was sort of in a bit of a quote unquote LA phase, I read The Devil Wears Prada, got sent to me. And I was like, this is great. And I thought the movie was fine, but that's the only screenplay I was like, I want to direct this movie because it would be so much fun to go all over the world and shoot this. And the screenplay was great, but I don't tend to, I tend to go the other way. Like I'll like a show and then go back and look at the, go look at the pilot and sort of see how they're structuring it and stuff like that. Like just to see, as you say, to see what they left out. Like what's an example for you of something that you read that and you went and saw that?
No, I mean, I don't want to name names, but, but I've read beautifully written screenplays where screenplays are where it was written to be read, not to be shot.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And so I've read things that are like, oh, it's almost like a piece of, like if you read any of Tarantino's scripts, they're beautiful prose and they're beautifully written, you know, but he's not, but he's translating it into, on film in a very sort of, a different way. So I've had that experience where something is so it's like the screenplay is almost like a selling tool.
Oh, I see. Yeah. You know, but but don't you think like, okay, so two questions. Do you think you can make a good movie out of a bad screenplay?
No.
Yeah, I would 100% agree. I think it's impossible.
It's impossible.
You're dead in the water.
Let me ask you, what's been the biggest influence on you for your writing in terms of making you better or making you sort of realize how to, make the process easier for you? What's been the biggest influence on you?
That's a good question. I don't think it's ever easier. I've noticed it's gotten harder as the year's gone on. Like I don't find writing, I was sort of like, I remember in university writing this 500 word short story that they met, they fell in love. They broke up. I thought it was brilliant. It took place over two pages. It's like, I'm a genius. People are like, this is shit. So, but I feel like I read a lot of novels. I watch a lot of stuff. And then you kind of like, I listen to music. So all those, to me, it's always a melting pot. I mean, you steal like good art, you steal from things. You go, oh, okay. I might be working on something that's completely different than this.
Right.
Like, so watching, like the good example is watching the Succession finale. It's so about character and it sustains itself through character. And then you're like, oh, I can take that and make sure that this pilot I'm writing, I'm dead. Like I'm solid on my characters and who they are and all that. Like you read Jeremy Strong does an interview talking about being Kendall. You go, oh, okay. So that's how he's taking from the page and translating it on there. And so it's always a bit of a mixture, but I find just exposing myself, especially to shows, movies, and novels and stuff like that, the big thing for me.
Yeah. Do you think that there's a difference between writing a screenplay for television is different than writing a screenplay for film? Is there like a difference for you?
So So I kind of feel like I feel like it's easier, quote unquote. It's never easy, but for television, because you don't have to go as far on each part. Like you can sort of not meander or not waste time. I always think you got to turn the page. You got to keep the audience engaged, but you can probably go to more unexpected places. Whereas the structure of the screenplay, the three acts or all the stuff that you have to get there in 90 minutes. It's even though I love film, it's a little less interesting right now than trying to work with a bigger canvas in television. I mean, how about you? What do you think?
I've done both.
Yeah.
You know, I've written for television and I've written for film. I think the difference between how I think about it is I find television is more akin to the stage to playwright in.
Oh, interesting.
You know, it's more akin to playwright, to sort of character, dialogue and plays. And I find film is more, for me, akin to visual art, where you're trying to interpret an image, you're trying to interpret a story. Because oftentimes screenplay, like a movie, is not even, some of the best movies are not about the story. You know, they're about the feel of the film, or the vibe of the film, or just the character, or just the way an image.
Right. Sure.
Exactly. Trip life is like, what is that story? You know what I mean? There's a vibe and a feel, where in TV, again, for me, it's more akin to plays. Cause in television, there's very few images that you remember. You know, I think you remember character, you remember dialogue.
Yeah,
but it's not like films where you, when you think of 2001, or
North by Northwest, like there's
Northwest or Jesse J. You think images are the first things that pop into your head. Where in television, I feel like it's more character, that sort of more, the more akin to sort of plays, I find.
And where is your interest lying more, with television or with film? Like, what do you?
Well, you know, it's in both. You know, because I'm doing both. I switch back and forth all the time. You know, I spend a bunch of years doing television, and then I wanted to sort of get back to the muscle of trying to create a a film, you know, and that's what, you know, and that's why I went off and did Brother. But you know, in television, it's not unusual for somebody to walk into a room with a cup of coffee and then they have a 3-page conversation. You know,
right?
There's a pleasure in having sort of sparkly, interesting banter.
Yes.
And then they go to the restaurant and sit at a table and have another 3-page conversation.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? Or right into the office, you know, right in, you know, they go to office. And then, so those, oftentimes those spaces are not as like, you know, they're not complete, you know, they're not as sort of visually as rich as, say, a movie. Whereas we're in a movie, you're constantly trying to figure out how to visually tell a great story.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, I mean, you wouldn't think like that way. In all my Puny Sorrows, the train imagery was such a central part.
Right.
Kind of like, you know, the electric tower, sort of that motif ran through the whole thing. And you kind of find that, like, through location scouting, through the writing and stuff like that.
How much of your dialogue did you, because what I like about the film is it's so rich with the words and a dialogue. How much of it did you have to cut, and how much of it did you have to kind of like, okay, the scene, even though I love the scene, is maybe four and a half minutes too long, you know, 4.5 minutes, and I need to get it down to 2.5 minutes.
Went the opposite way in terms of, I mean, there was a lot of rewriting, and right. Both Sarah Gadden and Allison Pill, really, when they signed on, they kind of were great editors in a way that made, like, they really beat me up early in prep, because we're all up in, but it was great because they were smart and they were right. So it wasn't like I was looking at it going, no, it must be this. It's like, just because there's just a number of scenes where they met. But for that film, I was really, as a filmmaker, interested in exploring the climactic scene in the hospital room. I think it was 7 minutes long. And I'm like, I don't know if this, like it was long. And I'm like, I don't know if this is gonna make it. And
Did it give you pause? I think, can I get away with this? It didn't get you, you just like,
no, it was kind of like, I'm going for it rather than like, I wasn't just like, okay, I want to direct a 7-page scene, but it had a integrity, I hoped, that would play out. But we take chances like this, like that's kind of, and it did, it sustained itself, it justified itself. I, you know, I'll kill my babies in an edit. They're not working. Like, you know, my best friend could be having the part. If the part's not working, the part's on the cutting room floor. So it wasn't like I thought this is definitely going to last, but they needed that space to get to where they needed to go emotionally. And that's the longest scene I've probably ever written, because I'm more like, oh shit, we're three pages, we got to get going here. So
yeah, I would never have the nerve to end a movie with a seven. I wouldn't have the nerve to do it at a 7-page dialogue.
It wasn't the last scene. It was a long one in there. But I do remember thinking, okay, this is why we make films. Like, it's like, hopefully the world we've created is working at this point. And if it's not, well,
We should probably bring some. I see about four Q&A's. You want to click on and see what people are asking? Yes.
Okay. So, okay. One, any plans to publish any of your notebooks or rough notes in the future so we can get a sense of your process and appreciate it as an art form in itself? I would happily pay for a copy. So, question, how much would you pay? Go ahead.
I would never sort of sell a notebook. No, I mean, but I've had sort of old screenplays that I've made notes on,
yeah,
or, you know, that I keep, that, you know, at some point, if somebody's interested, I'll probably share it. But no, I would never sell a notebook.
No, because
you.
No, like I just write on these yellow things I said, and my daughter's like, well, it's great because if somebody stole it, they could never read it. So it's illegible, sort of, to me. And it's not, I've actually just kind of started going back to the notebook because I find it surprisingly, I get distracted on the, like when I'm writing. So I kind of have to start here, know what I'm going to do, then go to the computer. It kind of helps me from like getting down some rabbit hole of stupidity that has nothing to do with what I'm trying to accomplish.
What else are people asking?
Could you tell me more about how you find your way through structure, please? What moments help?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I start. I'm working towards a climax in terms of the structure. In terms of the structure, I'm working towards what I think is the emotional climax. And it's usually, I have a sense of, it's usually between like 80 pages and 90 pages roughly in there. And then I find when I edit a film, if we're talking about film, I feel like usually around the 25 minute mark, ruffling there, something has to develop. You know, I usually want to start with some kind of hook, some kind of teaser, something in the first couple pages that says, I need you to turn the page and follow what I'm telling you. And then I sort of set these moments that I'm working towards. These are sort of like beats, these like turning points in the story that I'm working towards. And I'm working towards about 5 or 6 or 7 of these moments.
And do you know in your notebook, are these kind of like,
yes, in my notebooks, I'm working towards this reversal, she discovers this, the gun or whatever it may be, you know, she discovers the body or whatever. Like, so I'm always working. I usually have about five, six or seven events architecturally that I'm working towards. And I learned this from editing movies and from editing TV, you know, because editing TV shows and editing movies have been a bigger influence on me as a writer, because you realize people are impatient. You know, it's like, why am I watching this?
Yeah.
When are they going to get to the next beat? You know, and back in the day, we don't do this as much anymore, but back in the day when we, you know, when it was a screenplays were five acts and you're working towards the cliffhanger for each act out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I learned that sort of discipline from writing and TV, where you're working towards these act breaks. And so with a feature film, I'm also architecturally, structurally working towards these big story moments that hopefully is not just plot, but it's also character, revelation, a reversal in the story, a twist in the story, and something that's going to spur the reader to get to the next plot point, to the next plot point, to the next plot point, until you arrive at the emotional climax, that sort of a culmination of all these signposts you set all along the way, and then of course the denouement at the end. Yeah. So that's how I do it. And then in the case of Brother, I'm playing with time. I'm playing with like structure and time. So I lay out all my time beats, and within the time beats is, you know, I'm working towards, you know, in the case of Brother, there's a moment between where the brothers are walking home, and there's like a incident that occurs. I'm structuring the screenplay to get to that moment, and editing to get to that moment.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I look at it as the thread analogy for me. Like, what is the pull from the first part of the screenplay or in a screenplay situation until the end? And so, like I said, with All My Puny Sorrows, it was, can Yoli restore balance in the universe? And all, 1 week is, will he get treatment? And, you know, in Still Mine is like, what is going to happen to this couple? And so then... I guess I do probably know the climax of what, you know, what ultimately is going to happen. And then you're kind of working backwards. But to me, it always has to have a pull. There has to be a dramatic pull, and it could be slow, it could be quick, it could be all kinds of different pacing. But that, as you say, what is forcing people to turn the page in the world that you set up? And I think that's always... I'm always thinking of the audience when I'm writing, for better or worse.
Yeah. And I'm constantly like, for instance, a scene can't just do one thing for me. You know what I mean?
A scene, 100%.
You know what I mean? A scene has to do two or three things at the same time. It has to advance a story, reveal character, and develop the plot.
100%.
At the same time.
Yeah. The really didactic. Okay. This is, they're just going to end up in the cutting room floor.
We
know this is going to happen. And I always I love writing dialogue. Like, for me, writing dialogue is much easier than trying to figure out structure.
I'm the opposite.
All right.
I'm the opposite. I don't love writing dialogue.
Yeah.
You know, I want to get as much in a scene. If I could do it without dialogue, I would. I only write dialogue when I have to. Like, for me, it's opposite. I'm not that interested in the banter between and the dialogue sort of back and forth in that classic sense. I'm just like, people talk, but it's like, if I could figure out how to tell the story, reveal character, tell the story, and advance the plot without dialogue, that's my first go-to. And then I only add, because when I'm outlining the script, I'm only just like saying what happens in the scenes. And then what's happening in the scene, and then I'll write dialogue to reveal the characters, reveal the story. But that's the last part of it for me. It's always a dialogue in the last part.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I find the characters through the dialogue. Like, it's a weird, like, if I know what the scene's about, and again, you're trying to work
on
a bunch of different layers.
That's interesting. I find it through the behavior.
Then they'll start talking, and then it'll be weird. Like, they'll say something like, oh, okay, well, this is not exactly where I was going to go. Especially when it's coming easy, but.
It's interesting. They do something that I didn't expect.
Yes.
It never say, it's oftentimes, it's very rarely for me the character says something. Like it happens. It's usually they do something that I'm like, oh, why did they just do that? And
it's really, it's the opposite. It's through, and again, it's not, I mean, it's not all, it's not 100% obviously, but but not to be wordy either, not to go like, okay, if they, we're not going to reveal it. We don't need to necessarily reveal it through dialogue, but yeah, there's been lots of times where scenes work great without anything being said. So,
yeah, you know, there's a great scene in The Fugitive.
Yeah.
And the legend goes, I don't know if you know the story, but the legend goes where Harrison Ford and Tommy Lee Jones, Tommy Lee Jones is chasing Harrison Ford through a tunnel, and you know, Harrison Ford is accused of killing his wife, but he didn't kill his wife. And they have a moment, they have the scene where Harrison Ford is explaining all this in the script. They had all, he's explaining why he didn't do it. He's innocent. And they get there on the day of shooting the scene. And they reduce like a 3-page scene to 2 lines, which is Harrison Ford saying, I didn't kill my wife. And Tommy Lee Jones saying, I don't care.
Yeah.
And it tells you everything.
Yeah, exactly. It's sort of like, yeah, like that's the different approaches to it too. And we've all been there where we're like, oh my God, like I've already said like some, but we know this information, like it's so, so stupid. Okay. We got not too much time. Let's go to another question. I'm adapting a true story and struggling with my main character who is supposed to be the hero of the film. Yet in real life, they make a decision later in the story that shifts them into something of a villain in the public's eye. I'm having a hard time finding what would motivate them to ultimately make this decision, yet still be seen as the hero. Or would you suggest leaning into this villainous turn and ending the script in a more ambiguous view of the character?
It's funny. As a writer director, I would never think of my characters or hero or villain. I would just say that in my mind, they're just the character. You know, like I wouldn't, because everybody have their, you know, it's just, does what they're doing make sense or what they're doing doesn't make sense. So I never think of them as types, you know, because I think the trouble is that I've read a lot of scripts that are just peopled with types.
Yes.
They're peopled with like the quirky best friend or the strong or the hero or, you know, all the types that we've seen throughout the history of film and television. And they're people that way. And so for me, and of course now there's a curse of the character has to be likable, you know, like somehow, because I'm sure we've all had a note where we you know, you give the script to somebody to read and they say, well, the character's just not likable. We just don't like them. And for me, it's like this movie that pops into my head as we're talking
is
Raging Bull.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, is Jake LaMotta, is he a hero or a villain? He's just Jake LaMotta. He's the character. He's who he is. So I wouldn't worry so much. My advice to the writer or the person that's asked that question is that I wouldn't worry so much about making them a type, the hero or the villain. I would just stay true. I would just ask a question. The question I would ask myself, is this character being true to who they are?
Yeah, I think I agree. And I also think that the turns are more interesting. Like,
yes,
like the fact that in real life the character started off as good and then turned villainous. If you don't know that as the person doing the story, and then we don't know that as the audience, but yet the journey takes us there, that's interesting. Like,
right. Yeah. But even the term good, you know, what does that mean? You know?
Yes, I agree. I mean, I'm,
you know,
I'm,
it's hard. It's,
yeah. I'm being simplistic, but you know what I mean? Like when they fall on the quote unquote good side of things and they turn into the villainous side of things. I think we want to watch characters change
and evolve
or learn or not learn or make stupid decisions, make good decisions.
Yeah.
And that's
Go
ahead.
No. I was going to say the hardest part about just to unpack the question a little bit is, the challenge with all of us when we write is to try to figure out how do we avoid the cliche?
100%.
You know what I mean? And that's where the hard part of writing comes in. because we've all ingested so much narrative and we've all ingested so much character, then to, so then we're writing to a type that we think it should be, the hero or the villain, as opposed to the best screenplays that I've read or have always been like, I don't understand a character, but but for some reason I want to follow them. I want to see what they do.
100%. Yeah. And it's that shading that I think the really good writing comes out of. Cause if you know that this person is just inherently good and uncomplicated, you're going to be bored by page 20. And like, you want flawed heroes, you want flawed characters, you want to explore the flaws, I think, cause that's what kind of makes it interesting, because we were all flawed in our own way.
Or see somebody that, or see somebody on screen that we have never seen before.
Yeah, and this goes into the next question: how do you go about writing diverse and interesting characters? So many of mine end up sounding like me and my friends. Get different friends? No, just kidding.
What do you think? A crack at that? Let me process that one.
I think it comes from reading and listening and trying to absorb other people's lives that you kind of go, oh, like I listen to speech patterns of other people. Like, oh, that's an interesting way of saying that. And then I kind of get in, like I impose my own narrative on people in real life. And like, oh, that would make an interest. Like I can insert my version of that person into the narrative that I'm trying to do. And so I kind of always steal that way. So they're not. So for me, and it's going to be different for you, I know, but for me, it's the dialogue that I'm hearing that informs everything else. And I'm imposing. And then, but the physicality too, like if they don't make eye contact, if there's a nervousness, if there's something, and then that you can build an interior and exterior world in that character that's not like you. Like, and again, if you're writing, I don't know, a closed world that everybody is in your world, maybe they're going to sound more like you. But if you're depending on the world, for sure.
Well, yeah, I usually have a good sense of the backstory of the character.
100%, yeah.
You know what I mean? So I start there, which is like, who's this person? What's their backstory? How do they, how do they arrive in the story? And usually comes out in the story that's been told that I'm trying to write. And when I was early in my writing career as a writer director, a lot of my characters were internal. And what I discovered as I did more screenplays, as I wrote more, was that I focused so much on action. I needed something external.
Yeah.
I needed something external for the character to want. You know what I mean? Yep. I needed to find something concrete and external to say they want this. They want to, and then the finding the voice and finding the backstory, coupled with what it is that they're trying to strive for within the screenplay. Hopefully it's original. Hopefully it's fresh. Hopefully it's something that is true to you. Cause I don't think you could really do anything original. You could only do your own version of whatever that story is. You bring yourself to it, because I don't think we're going to, at this point, 100 plus years of cinema and TV, that you're going to do anything that's completely new. All you have is your own kind of biography and your own sense of what it is. That's what you bring into it, your own personality. And hopefully that is fresh and that is original.
I agree. I think that's probably a great place to stop. But I do think you have to bring everything I write, no matter what the character is personal.
Yeah.
There's a part of me in every character.
Cool.
Come on. Thank you. This is fun.
Mike,
congratulations on all your successes. And
yes, same with you. And Emily and the WGC, thank you so much for hosting this. It was a great conversation.
You've been listening to Writers Talking Screen, a Writers Guild of Canada podcast. Thank you to our technical producer, Philip Vukovic, and thank you for listening.